Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 329 for February 18th, 2014. We're talking about copyright, one of those difficult topics that we all need to deal with at some point or another if we work in or with a church or school. Sally and I provide some resources, and we talk to a very knowledgeable copyright expert right within our synod, working at Northwestern Publishing House, Christine Loffer. We thank her for joining us. Lots of good insights from her for you. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. It is that time again, time for Wells Tech, a show where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And there are plenty of conversations to be had, and we're glad that you joined this one. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are coming to you live, 4 o'clock Tuesday, Central Time. And if you are not with us live, consider that if your day permits, 4 o'clock every Tuesday afternoon, Central Standard Time, or I guess in a few weeks, Central Daylight Time. Sally, how are you?
I'm good. I want to remind people of the link where they can find that live broadcast. It's at wellstechlive.wells.net. Yep. And if you can't join us then we certainly welcome you to visit our Wells Tech show notes site and pick up the archived version available there, typically on Wednesday mornings.
Yeah, it's delayed things a little bit because we've got to do some processing. We upload it to like 10 different places, it seems like. And then, well, whatever. Also, those of you that are watching live, and there are some of you, there is a Q&A function, and that's one of the reasons to watch live, is that you can participate in the conversation. So if you are at that URL that Sally gave, just click on the video itself. It'll open up, and there'll be a question box on the right side. It doesn't actually have to be a question. It can be a comment as well, or something for us to consider, or something to expand our knowledge, because we are not the experts. And with this topic today, Sally, that's especially true.
It's the best you can do with as a disclaimer, huh, Martin? Because we're talking copyright.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and we are not attorneys, though we play one on television. No, it's a complicated topic, and I was really excited that we were able to tap into some expertise on this topic so we could not just kind of be out here trying to figure it out on our own.
Yeah, copyright can be very complicated, even without the advent of technology. And it's, to be honest, one of the most oft-asked questions that I get from congregations considering either live streaming or recording their services, even, you know, the old traditional DVD approach or even cable channel television. What copyright implications are there? And we've talked about copyright before, Sally, so it's not a new topic, but it seems like it's never as clear as we'd like it to be. We had Harvey Dunn on, I know, one of the first few shows that we had way back when, and he shed some light on intellectual property rights and those kinds of things, and we've talked about it a few times before, but yeah, it was great to have Christine come and enlighten us, because that's what she lives day in and day out at MPH. So maybe now is as good a time as any to cue up that video and let Christine share some of her years of experience with us. So,
a few magical clicks. And
I have Christine Loffer from Northwestern Publishing House with us today. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role there at Northwestern Publishing House.
I am the coordinator of copyrights and permissions here at NPH. What that means is I secure any needed copyright permissions for anything we publish in our publications, from music to books. I also handle permissions that we get, or requests that we get from churches to reprint or use our copyrighted materials.
Okay. Have you always been at MPH, and how long have you been there?
I have been here for about 13 years.
Okay.
I actually started out as a copy editor. So I also do some copy editing and proofreading. And then when the supplement came out, they needed someone to help with the permissions process. So, and since then, I've kind of taken over that position.
And did you know anything about copywriting before then, or is it on the job, just in time?
On the job. I knew very little coming in. So it was a quick crash course. So I've learned a lot over the years.
Back then, copyright was a little bit easier than it is today.
Well, I think, the copyright laws haven't really changed. Technology has changed, and certainly the way churches and people use materials has changed. So I think that's what makes it complicated.
Very good. I commend you for taking on that role, because that's really intimidating to most people, and that's really why we're talking about it on the podcast today, because we'd kind of rather ignore copyright than actually be in compliance with it, I think. Very confusing topic. Why do you think that is?
Again, going back to the technology, when Christian Worship was published, we were all using pew hymnals. Very few churches had websites. So a lot of the uses have changed. So I think that's one reason. Another is when you're talking about the content in something like a hymnal, you can have up to 3 different copyright holders for each hymn. So it's not like you just need permission from one entity. So that can be confusing. Identifying who that copyright holder is. What do I need to do to get permission? So I think those are 2 things. The other thing is fair use can vary. Copyright law doesn't really, there are some fair use provisions. Most of the uses by churches, other than face-to-face educational uses, are going to fall outside of fair use. And fair use is kind of up to each publisher, each copyright holder to define. So it can be confusing, because what one allows, another might not. Most Christian publishers, like ourselves, give a little bit more leeway. Mm-hmm. So that can be confusing, because there's no set amount as far as number of stanzas or pages in a book. It's going to vary by publisher.
Okay. So walk us through a typical conversation you have with whoever. First of all, who do you normally talk to in a congregation? Is it normally the pastor that is calling you?
I talk to all different people.
Yeah. Okay.
All different. It could be the pastor, a lot of church secretaries, choir directors, music directors.
Sure. Okay.
Directors. Yeah.
So what? Walk us through a typical conversation. So they call you up and say, Christine, I'm really concerned about, or I really am confused about what? What do you hear a lot?
I think there's a lot of confusion about just where to start. Churches want to begin podcasting their services on their website, or they want to start reprinting on a weekly basis their hymns and liturgies in a service folder. And so it's just walking them through what licenses they might need, how to determine what they need permission for, and then how to get those needed permissions.
Are there particular resources that you point them to, or licensing entities that you recommend?
Well, in regard to Christian Worship and the supplement, actually we have a copyright page on the NPH website that's a really great resource. We've tried to anticipate some of those questions and spell them out. It's at nph.net/copyright, and there's links there to a couple different documents. One pertains to Christian Worship. There's another one for the supplement, and it will identify which ones are covered by onelicense.net, which is the licensing agent that we would recommend for Wells churches that use Christian Worship. The reason for that is most of the member publishers of onelicense.net are the copyright holders for, it's going to cover most of what's in the supplement and the hymnal, not all of it. So there's links, it identifies which hymns are covered, which hymns are not, how you need to get permission from the ones that fall outside of onelicense.net. So the first place I would direct people to is our website. It's also on the product description pages for those two products, as well as the README file. If any electronic product that you buy, check out the README file, because chances are it's going to spell out the terms of use and what you can and can't do.
So those hymns or pieces of music or copyrighted material that aren't covered by onelicense.net, what's the typical approach or process that a congregation needs to go through to be able to use those?
It's going to vary, and it's going to depend on the hymn.
Sure.
Some of those, in the supplement, there's quite a few that are covered by CCLI. In the case, I'll use our congregation as an example. We regularly reprint. We have the electronic edition of the supplement, and we regularly reprint all of the hymns. So we actually have a yearly license with both onelicense.net and CCLI. There are some in Christian worship that are going to fall outside of those two, and really then you just need to contact the publisher directly. I've included that in the documentation on the README file, as well as the website. And you know, if you need help finding contact information for a different publisher, we usually have that. So just contact us, and we can help you with that process.
Awesome. Seems like there's just a, you know, Sally and I have been talking about that on the show. There seems like just a wealth of helpful FAQs out there put out by One License or CCLI, because they recognize that there is a need for this. So when a congregation has the license, sometimes I think they think, well, that's it. I just need to purchase a license and I'm done. But there's really more to it. Isn't there kind of a reporting process that they need to be aware of as well?
Yes, with onelicense.net, there is a reporting process. Each week you need to log in, and it's a very easy process. I've done it for our church, and you just need to report each week what hymns and liturgies you use. And that's a very important step, because that's how the royalties get diverted to the composers and the authors. You know, if you don't report, it's not going to, the whole purpose is to, you know, compensate these artists for their work. And, you know, unless you report, it's not going to go to the correct people. So that's an important step. CCLI does not require that you report weekly. Every once in a while, they select a group of churches, and then for a six-month time period, you need to report, but you don't need to do that on a regular basis with CCLI. But like I said, most of what's in Christian worship in the supplement is going to be under one license. So I always tell churches, if you're looking, there isn't one single license that's going to cover everything. But if you're looking at the different ones, onelicense.net is going to cover most of it. So if you're going to go with one, that's the one to go with.
Okay. And everything we've been talking about, particularly like the supplement when it came out with the electronic version, we're talking about printing those hymns in the worship folder so you don't have to have the pew edition of the hymnal or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this is for the people that are there physically in the building worshiping. It becomes a whole nother story when you start streaming the services or archiving them online or whatever. And in particular, just focusing on the worship folder, I'm guessing there's probably different licensing, or maybe it's not even appropriate to publish the worship folder online.
Yeah, it does. That isn't covered by one license. There isn't a license that's going to cover that. Publishers and copyright holders are going to be a little bit more leery of allowing, say, a worship folder to be published on a public internet site, simply because it's just so easy to copy. So that falls outside of the one license. So even if you have a onelicense.net, it's not going to cover posting your service folder online. Then really the only thing you can do is get permission from each of the copyright holders each week.
And that includes both the text and the music, so they're both copyrighted, so they can't just produce a service folder that just has the text so somebody could sing along at home?
If the text is public domain. Right. And in terms of Christian worship, a lot of the hymn texts are public domain, but the bottom line is anything copyrighted, if you want to post it on your internet, post it on your website in any way, if you want to reprint it in your service folder, if you want to project it by PowerPoint onto a screen, those are all considered reproductions, and you need permission from the copyright holder.
Okay. The The content that is in Christian worship, the content is in the supplement. I think a lot of people think, well, you own it, or NPH owns it. That's really not the case. So it's very important to go through these steps, and be kind of cognizant of that. And you've mentioned a couple of resources that will help people kind of be aware of that. How is MPH kind of spreading the word? And, you know, as you're coming into to new technologies, are there, you mentioned the resources, but are there other ways that MPH is trying to get the word out about copyright?
Like I said, we have a copyright webpage on our website that has a lot of information. We're always here to take calls. We try with a lot
of... You get a lot of calls?
You know, when the supplement first came out, there was a lot of calls, and then with the electronic pew edition, I'm anticipating with Christlight coming out this spring, there'll be a lot of confusion about those uses. We try as much as possible to provide some documentation in the product itself. So the first thing, you know, especially if it's an electronic, whether it's a Bible study, a Christlight CD, check the README file or the copyright on the CD case, and, you know, some of that's going to be spelled out. And, you know, when in doubt, ask permission. I think that's an important thing. You know, even not just our stuff at NPH, but anything copyrighted that you want to reproduce, if you're not sure, it's better to ask the publisher ahead of time. Chances are, you know, they're going to allow it if it's a legitimate, falls within what they consider fair use, but it's always best to ask first.
Yeah, and it applies not just to music, as you mentioned, but Bible study, vacation Bible school materials. There's all kinds of things that that would apply, right?
Right, and it can vary from publisher to publisher. So, you know, what we allow, another publisher might not allow. So you have to look at each individual product. Mm-hmm. But if you have any questions about a product, even if, like, we don't contain all of the content in Christian worship, you can still contact us with questions. We might not be able to give you permission directly, but we can give you contact information for that holder and tell you what you need to do.
So before we let you go, I got to ask, well, what could happen? A lot of congregations think, well, nobody's going to come knocking on my door and take me to jail. Mm-hmm. Really, what can the consequences be?
You know, that depends. And most people I talk to, it's not so much the risk of litigation that they're concerned about. You know, most churches want to abide by the law. Sure. They want to do what's right. So that's usually their main concern. The best advice was something I heard from a copyright administrator at another publisher. And he said churches need to think of themselves as weekend publishers. So here at NPH, we have to scrutinize everything we publish, whether it's quotations from Luther's works in a book, a hymn stanza being used as a prayer in meditations, and especially music. And we have to get permission, you know, for even if we think it might fall within fair use, we're going to ask first. So you need to look at everything you're putting on your website, everything you're putting in your service folder, and think of it as a publisher would think of it. So I thought that was really great advice. And also, you know, it involves a certain amount of planning. So try to plan ahead as much as possible. You know, and this doesn't always have to fall on a pastor or choir director, one person. You know, maybe there's someone in your congregation, if you want to look into the possibility of streaming or podcasting your services, or we want to start reprinting everything every week in our service folder. You know, maybe there's someone in your congregation who can research that. There's a lot of information on the web and on our website. So maybe that's something that someone in your congregation can take on.
Excellent. Christine, I just have the utmost respect for what you're doing. We all do. Everybody in Wells Tech commends you for sharing that information, because that's challenging stuff and needs to be attended to, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some of the questions. I mean, we get a lot of copyright questions on the show and through email and whatever, and we're really blessed to have, you know, somebody that pays attention to that within the Synod, and thank you for what you do. Appreciate you also coming on the show.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Christine. Really appreciate the time. I'm sure that there are times where her phone does ring off the hook, Sally. It's and some tough conversations to be had too. I think one of the things that a couple of things she mentioned resonated with me. One is planning. You need to think ahead. If you're just kind of I've got a service on Sunday and it's Thursday, that's probably not enough time to get all your ducks in a row, especially if you want to use copyrighted material. So that's something that you have to keep in mind with any kind of production, so to speak.
Absolutely. I want to just do a quick look at some of the resources that Christine shared with us, and we'll have links to these on the Wells Tech show notes site. First, the NPH copyright page that she mentioned during the interview at nph.net/copyright, I believe. I'll get you there. She also shared a link to the U.S. government copyright site and also a link to a book called The Essential Guide to Copyright Law for Churches. And we'll have all those links available in the show notes.
I have a question, Sally, from Jason Winjet. He says many churches have the belief that they can use their local public access television to share their full services and have done so for decades before streaming. Advice to them? that's a great question, and I wish we had asked Christine that, and I'm not sure if she would have had the answer. There must be something there, because obviously when services are broadcasted, whether they're from a mega church or local access like a lot of our churches do, there must be something that has to apply, because this has been broadcasting a lot longer than the internet has, right?
Yeah, actually we had this discussion back at that Distance Tech and Outreach conference. There was a whole breakout on copyright, and Bruce Becker from Time of Grace was in that breakout session.
Awesome.
When we had
we're
going to
get the definitive answer. Yes.
And it's not what you'd expect. It's not what you just said. Unfortunately, Bruce said the television stations pretty much have a disclaimer that they're not responsible for what the people are choosing to broadcast on them. So it's still up to you as the entity doing the broadcast to have the proper copyright permissions for television as well.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Makes sense. So,
not the answer we were hoping for, but that's what Bruce said. They spend a lot of time on that at Time of Grace.
Okay. Interesting. Well, it's good to have somebody there. And a lot of good things came out of that conference, but that was one of the breakouts that was, I think, really really helpful, that whole copyright discussion. And Christine's name came up a number of times in that conference. We do have somebody who kind of can navigate the waters for us and help us understand a little bit more about copyright. Fortunately, Christine isn't the only resource, but we've found a bunch of other resources, Sally.
That's right. And I think the entities that Christine mentioned, specifically One License and CCLI, they're in the business of selling you a product. They want you to buy their licensing, and they want to let you know that it covers you to whatever extent it does. So they end up having some great resources on their website. We found one other that Christine didn't mention. It's called Christian Copyright Solutions, and I think we've mentioned that on the show in the past. But as far as resources, almost CCS, Christian Copyright Solutions, has just vast resources on their site. So you can check out, again, onelicense.net and CCLI. But the Christian Copyright Solutions resources, they have basics about copyright and blanket licensing and things like making CDs and DVDs, doing web streaming, all those kind of things kind of broken down. And they talk about these other licensing agencies and kind of compare. The bottom line is, just like Christine said, not one single agency covers everything. And so you're probably, if you want to be fully covered, you're going to need to check out probably at least CCLI and One License to have a really good understanding of the coverage. I will mention one more resource I came across today, and try to have a link in the show notes to it. Again, it was from CCS, Christian Copyright Solutions, and it's kind of their basics for churches. The thing I liked about it is they had this blanket license coverage chart where they went through all different types of things that might need copyright, and they've listed everything from playing music before or after the service. You know, I think we've had people write to us and tell us, I had this great idea and I hooked up my iPod and I streamed music in the narthex before the service. Well, that has copyright implications because you're doing a public broadcast of something that was purchased for personal use only, you know. So it's kind of mind-boggling when you get into it. They list so many things here as potential issues for copyright, that I just thought this was a valuable grid just for that purpose.
Yep, and we've at the Synod level with our streaming and such, we've tried to navigate these waters too. We have a Wells radio, and we have permission from the artist to do that. But there are other times where we're producing or playing music that is not our own and is copyrighted. So we've actually gone to ASCAP and CSAC and BMI and gotten, you know, those coverages as well. One area that we haven't addressed really, Sally, is classroom usage. And there are all kinds of copyright questions and concerns, I think, that revolving around classroom usage for educational purposes. And again, there's probably some misunderstandings of what fair use covers. I think a lot of educators will say, well, that's educational. It's used for educational purposes, so it's fair use. But there are limitations on that as well. So we have a number of links in the show notes for that. But fair use definitely does cover you in some cases, but not in all cases.
Right. And just like Christine said, it may cover you in one way with one resource and in a completely different way with another. So you can't just assume, oh, that's fair use. Because the copyright holder can define even, you know, that you can only use a certain percentage of their work in that way or whatever it may be.
Right. So there are some just like there are on the church side, on the school side, there are some good resources that we'll put links to in the show notes. The Educator's Guide to Copyright, Fair Use and Creative Commons from the EduBlogger. There's kind of a cool YouTube video called the Fairy Use Tale, where they've kind of done a mashup of a lot of clearly copyrighted imagery,
Disney
movies, and
yeah,
caricatures, and really made kind of a mashup that educates you about what fair use is. So it's kind of cool.
Definitely. And then one more aspect is imagery. So we've talked kind of print and audio video kind of stuff, but also just using images. And there's a whole market out there where you can buy stock photography or find it for free that doesn't have royalties associated with it. So it's allowed to use for professional or commercial purposes or whatever. And we have links to a lot of those kind of royalty-free image sites that we want to share in the show notes as well.
Very good. So that's not the be-all, end-all of copyright discussions. Again, we're trying to provide resources. If you have advice or experiences that you'd like to share, please do that at the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Our thanks again to Christine for joining us and shedding some light on things. But again, the story's not over. I'm sure there are cases where, you know, there's still going to be some questions. So what Christine's advice was is very, very important. You make sure you're asking and don't guess. So it's important to kind of stay legal and to go through the appropriate channels. The good news is that a lot of these licensing agencies, OneLicense.net, CCLI, are not overly expensive. They're usually like half the cost of your regular license. So it's you know, 50% add-on to make sure you're covered. And I know many congregations, if they're not already, want to produce video and audio of their services and content. So take care.
Very good.
Sally, we should move on to ministry resources. We do have a submission this week from somebody we'll call Mrs. Anonymous.
She's a talented lady, that anonymous lady in our
lives. That's what I'll call her here, but not at home.
Okay.
But she shared something that we put that I felt was a great ministry resource. One for youth ministry, especially the sourceforym.com. You've got it up there on the screen. Did you have a chance to look at it, Sally?
I did, and basically it is a place for you to get an idea about movies and their appropriateness to use with particularly teenagers in a youth ministry setting. So, a good sounding board and resource to find out if the movie would be appropriate. And that's not the only link she shared. She also shared wing clips, movie clips that illustrate and inspire. So this is a clip site where you can get clips to go along with a point.
Yep, and they categorize it by theme or topic, mm-hmm. and then they tell you the exact segments of the movie if you wanted to pull it from a DVD or whatever, when it starts and stops, and some talking points, just some good youth material. I've led a youth Bible study that I used a book where it would tell me which movie to get and where to start and stop and some discussion points, and very useful. And I think the kids enjoy that, the visual along with the ability to watch a movie in class and then have a conversation around it.
Right. So.
Thank you, Mrs. Anonymous, for your ministry resource submission. It's still kind of under review whether you qualify for the Apple TV if you were to be the lucky prize winner or not. Probably not. But if you want to submit a ministry resource, you too could be entered to win a drawing in May for an Apple TV. And also, if you have a review, could be a product, could be a service, could be a piece of software, a website. If you want to do a review, can be a blog post or video review. We're giving away a Nexus 7 tablet for one of those reviewer submissions. So please do that. Sally, are we up to our tips of the week, I think?
Yes, sir. And you go first.
I do. And my tip, and I've been trying to keep these tips real simple. I like productivity tips, and there's just so many out there. But sometimes it's the little ones that make all the difference. And this one is one of those little ones. Probably if you counted the number of times in your browser during the course of a day you hit the back button, you might be surprised at how often you hit that back button over and over and over again. Sitting up there, usually in the upper left-hand corner, just waiting for you to click on, and you're constantly navigating our websites by navigating our mouse all the way up to the left and hitting that back button. There is an easier way, and that's using your keyboard. Using that old friendly backspace key. It's in the upper right. Once you are on a web page and you have navigated to another screen, by simply hitting that backspace key, you go back one site in the history of your browser. And if that weren't enough, if that weren't tip enough for you, if you wanted to navigate forward, you'd hit shift backspace. So you could navigate backwards and forwards all day without taking your hands off the keyboard.
That's great, Martin. You know, when I find that comes in most handy is sometimes there's pop-up windows and they get rid of the browser buttons. The button's not there for me to use
right.
to go back in my browser
navigation.
Window. Yep. And so, all of a sudden I need to go back and I can't because there's no button for me. The backspace key comes to my rescue. So
you have to be careful if you're in a form or a form field. Hitting the backspace key obviously is going to delete the previous character that you typed. Or if you're just in a blank field, it's not going to do anything. So you have to be not on a selectable field. But it will work, I think, in every browser, Mac or PC. Now, on a Mac, it's not called the backspace key. It's called the delete key. But it works the same way. All right. Sally, top that.
My turn, and I have a Google Form trick for you. If you've worked at all with Google Forms, you know that Google Forms are public on the Internet. There's no security around them. You can't limit their access. Now, granted, when you share a Google Form, it's the longest, ugliest web address that you can imagine. So it would be pretty hard for someone to guess that web address. But at times, you may still want to have some security around it.
It probably could be searched by Google, too, if they're
Yeah. So this little trick is going to allow you to password protect a form and then share a password to it to get to it. And it's not doing anything security-wise, but actually adding a field that's searching for or expecting a particular input. So with Google Forms, you can do multiple pages of your form. So basically, your first page of the form would be, please enter your password to continue. And the trick for that is then to set up that with a search for a particular expression. So you can put in data validation rules for different form inputs, and you just tell it a regular expression, and you put in whatever password you want on the form there as being what it has to match. And if they don't type in that exact phrase, then it's not going to let them progress. It's going to give them an error message, and they're not going to be able to get to the second page of your form. So it's kind of a workaround solution. I read it on Google Plus this week and thought it could really come in handy for someone who wanted to password protect their Google Forms.
Interesting. That does make a lot of sense. You're just using field validation as a way to put a interstitial form right in their face before they can get to the next page.
Exactly, with that page break ability. So
I wonder why Google does not provide password protection for that. I mean, everything is just wide open out there. Maybe that's something they'll do in the future.
Maybe so. Their forms tool continues to develop, and actually I continue to find more of these kind of resources where it's not in-your-face stuff, but it makes sense as to how to make it work for you. So.
Yep. Okay. Let's move on to our picks of the week.
And my pick of the week is also Google-centric. It's called Canned Responses, and it's a feature you can find in Google Labs. So in your Gmail, you can turn on canned responses, and this allows you to plop into any mail message some common text that you use quite often. You can save it and then use it as a canned response. And so the first thing you have to do is go into your settings and turn on this ability in Gmail Labs. And there's a blog post that I'll link to that walks you right through that process. It's super easy. Once you've turned it on, when you're in an email in your Gmail interface, there's a button in the bottom right corner that opens up some options, and canned responses will be on that list. And so, and before we were having our podcast today, I saved a canned response called MLC Tech Training Site, and I can choose to insert it, I can add new canned responses, or I can delete it from this canned response menu. So if I'm typing an email and I want to use that blurbage, I just go here and click insert, and just like that, magically, that email text is added to my message, and I didn't have to type it out. So this is useful if you type something over and over and over again to people. You can save them as canned responses and easily have them available to you in your Gmail messages. Again, I have a link to this blog post that walks you all the way through enabling it, saving your canned responses, and then using them. It's got great screenshots. It'll walk you right through the process. So check that out in the show notes.
Yeah, I can envision this being a very useful tool in tech support. So if you support either faculty or staff, or even students, and they're asking, you know, similar questions, how do I kinds of questions, the most commonly asked questions could be part of those canned responses. Kind of usually good for step-by-step kind of instructions and links and that kind of thing, so you don't have to type it over and over. So nice find, and totally free.
Yep.
My pick of the week is also free, and it's good news for churches especially, but that also applies or could apply to schools. And let me take my first swim into screen sharing in Google Hangouts. And that is Office 365. Office 365 is Microsoft's in-the-cloud offering for email, word processing, you know, all the Office suite. SkyDrive, which is document storage, Link, which is their IM and video chat client, as well as SharePoint, which is their intranet solution. And the good news is that Microsoft makes this whole product called Office 365, it's the E1 version, free to churches or to nonprofits. You can have, I think you can have up to 50 people, I want to say, for free. It might be even more than that. You simply have to prove that you are a registered nonprofit, and most of our churches can obviously do that, and then you would qualify for Enterprise E1, which is normally $8 a user per month. So this is actually a very good deal. So you get email and calendaring, up to 50 gigabytes in your mailbox per user, send attachments up to 25 megabytes, online conferencing, screen sharing, instant messaging with link as well and connection with Skype users, file sharing, so you have 25 gigabytes of storage right out of the box for that. You have 10 gigabytes of baseline storage for your SharePoint or your intranet, plus 500 megabytes per storage user. You have some social networking kinds of tools, the web apps, Office web apps, and some mobile apps. Now, the Office web apps are kind of cool. They've come a ways. I'm just showing my SkyDrive here. Works exactly the same way. So if you are a Microsoft SkyDrive user, you kind of already know how this works, but you can create any kind of file you want, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote. They have something called an Excel survey, which I will have to look at what that actually does. I'm just noticing it now. That
sounds like a Google form.
A form tool, right?
Yep.
And or a plain text document. So I've got a Word doc open here, and the interface looks a lot like Word. Now, it does have some limited functionality, so it's not the full Office in the cloud. You can't do things like mail merge, but you can do full page layout. You can insert tables and pictures and headers and page numbers and table of contents, those kinds of things. You can change the page size. You can add comments and do spell check, those kinds of things. And right from here, you can do a save as, so give it a different name. You can actually print it. What happens when you print is it prints to a PDF, which you can download and then print locally. You can share a document, so you can open this up to other people so that you're not having to send it as an email attachment. All the clients look very nice. So you've got the SkyDrive client, you have the contact list, you have calendar, and then you have Outlook.com, which is a nice web interface for your email. Just a nice package that Microsoft is making available. Now, if you are a school, they have a similar product, the A1, Office 365 A1 product, which is very similar and provides a lot of the same functionality and might be worth looking at. So this is clearly, Sally, a Google Apps competitor. So mm-hmm. It depends on what you want to spend your time in. It's there's a lot of parity, but I think there's some comfort level between what Office 365 offers as opposed to Google Docs, where you're sometimes kind of trapped. You don't have a Word editor, those kinds of things, if you're getting Word files and such. So if you can live with the Office in the cloud versions, you may not have to pay anything for the local Office software, but still have the Microsoft experience, and then have all the capabilities of great email and quite a bit of storage. And one of the nicer things about this too is if you're the tech person in your local institution, very easy to manage users, create email accounts. There are some tools that will allow you to archive email and those kinds of things. So it's a very nice solution for no cost, basically.
And the education one, is it free as well? You said there's
it
a parallel.
Is, right. It is.
Okay.
It is free. A1 is that license. They do offer some bundles. So if you want to actually purchase the local copies of Office, there's a discounted rate if you're an A1 customer. So there's a benefit there, too. So,
excellent.
That is my pick of the week.
I wonder if it works on a Chromebook.
It
I
will.
Guess it would. Yeah.
It will. Absolutely. It works in any browser. I've used it on Mac, PC. Works really well. So.
Okay.
Lots of options. So that will conclude our picks of the week section. Let's move on to community feedback.
All righty. Starting with my friend Tom Rosenau. Tom is principal over at St. John's in Pigeon, Michigan, and he is a Chromebook person. He shared a link to a blog post, and somehow I know how to share my screen. And this blog post is a little trick for Chromebooks, and it's the ability to get a keyboard look at all the function keys and things. So if you type Control, Alt, and question mark, you'll get an overlay on your Chromebook screen that shows what all the different function keys do. And I think there's another one that allows you to see what shift function keys do and that kind of thing. So, yeah, once it's up on your screen, you can hold down Control, and you'd see what the Control function keys did, and Alt, and see what they would do and that kind of thing. So just a visual built into the keyboard or the screen display if you type Control, Alt, question mark on Chromebooks. So that would be a great tip to share with your students if you've gone one-to-one with Chromebooks in your classroom. Next up, we had some feedback from our friend Pastor Rob Gunther up in Kenai, Alaska. Actually, a good bit of feedback. Starting with feedback on the whole book discussion that we had last week and what Google is doing to our brains kind of thing, and in particular, our inability to concentrate or be distracted by things. He even mentioned the movie Up and the dogs that respond to the term squirrel and how they all turn and look, you know, and I think that's what we're kind of combating is that distracted mind. And he talks about kids that have never known anything but being able to ask Siri or buy it on eBay or Amazon right away. You know, why rent a DVD when you can stream it? That kind of mentality. So it's definitely a different world in that regard. And one suggestion Pastor Gunther had was to use accountability software. Martin, we've talked about things like Covenant Eyes in the past, and oftentimes that's used to fight addiction to pornographic websites where it blocks certain websites and it gives your accountability partner reports anytime you go to certain websites or whatever it may be. But that type of website can be repurposed to block things like Facebook or eBay or ESPN.com or whatever your vice is on the internet that takes away too much of your time. There's other solutions out there. I think I can share my screen again. Things that are specifically for keeping up with how much time you spend on the internet, like internettimer.net and internet off. Which is from Crystal Rich. So you can turn off the internet for a period of time. Just doing a little searching, we also were reminded of a website called X3 Watch, which again kind of has that accountability slant to it, like Covenant Eyes, but there is a free version of this. So Covenant Eyes is a premium. You can get X3 Watch for free, or you can pay for the premium version to have more features or whatever. But again, you could use this just to limit your internet access. It's not just for, you know, limiting pornographic sites or whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
one thing that comes to my mind, if you're a Firefox user, it might be on Chrome too, but I know it's on Firefox. It's called Leech Block. It's billed as a simple productivity tool designed to block those time-wasting sites that can suck the life out of your working day. All you need to do is specify which sites to block and when to block them. So you can throw in Facebook or Twitter or those things that get in the way of a productive day, and then you can say, well, only block it from, you know, 8 to 6 or, you know, 10 to 5 or whatever it is, and it'll actually do it for you and will actually not let you get to those sites. So another option there.
Interesting. All right, just a few more things from Pastor Gunther. He's just a wealth of contributions this week, and we really appreciate that. Yeah, yep. Got it going on up there in Kenai, Alaska. I wanted to share this app that he shared with us. It's called The Walk, and it's an interesting concept on a fitness app crossed with an audio book. And so apparently the audio book premise is that there was some kind of cataclysmic event that destroyed communication channels. And so whatever the important piece of information is that needs to be delivered has to be delivered by foot. So in order to read the next chapter of the book, you've got to walk part of the way to delivering this material. It's kind of got a spy theme to it, and you're basically walking across the distance of the entire UK because it's a British book. And so apparently it's working for him. He's got some great fitness success so far in the year 2014, and sounds like a fun way to get it done. So check out The Walk. It's an iOS app if you're interested in reading along and doing the walk.
We're not going to recognize him the next time we see him.
Yeah, he's going to be a lot thinner, apparently, from all that good exercise. One more interesting tip that he shared. I'll turn off my screen sharing and find the correct place. Whoops. In my mind map. Give me a second to juggle. And he said he heard this on a podcast that he listens to. Called Quick and Dirty Tips, from Quick and Dirty Tips Network, called Tech Talker. He headed over to the Home Depot and he bought a $3 electrical timer. These are the kind that you would plug into a lamp to make it come on for 2 hours every night or whatever if you're going to be on vacation or whatever. He plugged his modem into it and it comes on at 2 a.m. and it goes off at 1:59 a.m. or very close to that anyway. And so every night, just before 2 a.m., his modem is reset, basically. It powers off and powers back on because of the electrical timer, and it resets his network every night. And it's been a really cheap solution to keep his home network running smoothly with an auto refresh. So I thought that was a great tip and an easy way to do it.
Yeah, so. I'm assuming that that's okay on the hardware where you're shutting power off, but... want to
Hopefully
check with
so.
The manufacturer, but yep, good tip.
Yep. And one more comment. This was a tweet from our friend Rachel Pearson, who teaches over at Trinity in Waukesha, and it was something along the lines of, blame Martin Spriggs for being up so late because I have to keep playing Quiz Up. So, Martin, you have at least one person who's playing along with the quiz game that you recommended last week on the podcast.
It is addictive. I guess I didn't warn the viewers.
Full disclaimer.
Sternly enough. But,
have fun, Rachel.
Yeah, I hooked my wife up with it, and there's a art recognition quiz.
Uh-oh.
And she's playing other people, and yeah, it's a good deal. And free, so it's a lot of fun.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you for all of your community feedback. We welcome one and all, and we usually try and include almost all of it if we can on the show. So please don't be shy. You can submit it anonymously if you like, but we would like to share your experiences or questions, comments with the rest of the class, because that's what makes, I think, this show what it is, which is a community, the Wells Tech community. So wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. All kinds of links up there at the top. You can send us a good old-fashioned email at wellstech@wells.net, and or any your social network of choice. We're there. So, Sally, what's next week?
Next week, we are looking forward to having our friend Gail Potratz back on the show. I think it's been probably 3 or 4 months with the Christmas break and everything since she's been on the show. Gail is a super-duper technology teacher up at Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin, and she's gracious enough to join us every once in a while and talk ed tech. I know she's heavy into Chromebooks at her school. I'm not quite sure what we'll hear from Gail about next week, but it's always great when she's here.
Absolutely. Join us live if you would. Our music download of the week is from Koine. Many people are familiar with Koine in Wells circles, just great music that they produce and concerts that they have. Their song that we're going to make available for a free download is entitled Lord Jesus, You Have Come in Love. Go to our show notes page, look for the link. It'll be there for a week, where you can download that song, keep it on your hard drive, put it on your iPod, your iPhone, your Android, whatever, and play it as often as you like. Put it in your music rotation. Good stuff. So we thank Koine for their willingness to share their music with us for free. Sally, I think we've done enough today. So we're coming up on 5 o'clock, so I think our job here is done. Thanks to our live viewers. Appreciate you being here. Invite your friends, and we'll see you next week.